You are now listening to Spoilery Radio.
What's up, nerds? This is Back to the Spoiler, where we take a look back at some of the best and worst superhero, sci-fi, and fantasy films of all time, right here on Spoilery Radio. My name is Mason Fields. Tonight we are back to the spoiler to 1997 for Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin. With me once again, Cousin Alec. I think the only time I've seen this movie previously was when I saw it in theaters.
I think I may have watched it one more time after that. Maybe it got into like a Batman rewatch at some point.
Yeah.
But I think at that point was probably turned into a drinking game to make it more standable, where this time
every time there's a freeze pun, you have to drink.
Just any one-liner. Did anyone have a complete sentence in the whole movie?
No, I don't think so. If this came out in 1997, this would have been, I think, seventh going into eighth grade for me in that time frame.
Yeah.
So still young enough to kind of be into some comics. And, you know, obviously I'd grown up with these other Batman films. So when this one was coming out, it was like, hell yeah. You know, I mean, we talked about it forever.
Yeah, we're still excited, you know, and I was young enough to enjoy Batman Forever when that one had come out 2 years earlier.
We couldn't see the flaws in that at the time. So it was just
still excited. But, man, even 12-year-old Alec had gotten cynical enough to be like, this is not what I signed up for.
This is actually
Why people are beating up people for reading comics. I get it.
I get it now. This is one of the first movies where I actually remember being like in the theater and being cognizantly aware of like, oh, this is terrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the most part, it's like you're sitting through a movie, you're going to sit through it, and sure, it is what
Isn't
it is.
Isn't that a good movie fan list to have, though? Like the movies you've walked out of? It's really hard to get me to like, no, I'd rather just not be here for another 45 minutes. But this is one where it's like, yeah, no, I'm not watching this again.
Yeah, especially if you paid for, you know, full price in theaters and all that.
That's the great running joke that George Clooney had for years is if you ran into him on the street and said you had seen the movie, he would give you $5.
Yeah,
he just kept $5 bills on him.
Reimbursing people for it.
Because he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. That's the worst thing I touched.
So did this sit in with you pretty much the same way from that initial viewing? Just the like, oh God, yeah, I don't really need any more of these movies necessarily, or like, let's put this away for a little while.
As we look back, and I was trying to gauge it more in terms of just like comic book movies in general. Did this almost just kill comic book movies as an idea? Because the next one that gets really greenlit is the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, right? But that's not for...
Well, X-Men's a couple years away, but you know what came out the same year as this movie? Blade.
Oh, well, that's a whole different... They went full rated R, and it was awesome.
But not intended as a big comic book blockbuster.
Not the summer blockbuster that we know the comic books to be now. It feels like this movie was so bad that even there's all these money-making opportunities out there, the studios are like, nope, we don't know if we can do it.
Well, I actually kind of think this is the one that made them all go, all right, we've got to go like realistic because we can't go the cartoon extravaganza that was something like Batman Returns. That's why, you know, the original X-Men, they're all just in like kind of leather jackets and stuff.
It's true. Yeah.
We're getting
away
from
it. They really toned down the powers for the X-Men. They're trying to make it like, what would happen if you could actually, you know, the physics and whatnot. But yeah,
like after this one, camp was not allowed. For years, basically.
I can see that.
So I don't need to ask if this one holds up because it didn't. It was never up.
I disagree. It holds up exactly where it was before.
It holds down, basically.
It's in the same spot.
So not much on the making of this one. It was basically right after Batman Forever. They fast-tracked another sequel, which usually the Batmans had the kind of three-year window in between. And this one they shortened to two. I think you can kind of tell what happens when you try to rush one of these big, big movies like this. Of course, Joel Schumacher returning. he had done Time to Kill between Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, which was a pretty big hit at the time. So, you know, everybody was, for the most part, I think, excited to get him back, at least from the studio standpoint.
We got a big John Grisham novel. I bet that probably paid well.
Screenplay on this one, once again, by Akiva Goldsman, who did Forever, this time the solo screenwriting credit on this one. I got to say, this may be one of the worst, just pure on dialogue level, worst scripts for a movie I have ever. Like you said, is there a complete sentence in this entire movie?
Yeah, there's no finished thought. I don't know if they're ever conveying anything.
They're all
even
just
at the
whining.
Beginning of the. I mean, from the beginning of the movie, it's like a quit by Alfred, quit by Alfred, quit by mm-hmm. Robin, quit by mm-hmm. Alfred, and then we have an action sequence, and it's like
yeah, with a lot more quips in the middle of the action sequence.
Yeah, and it's just I don't know what they were trying for.
Yeah,
I do have a question for you too, cousin.
Yeah,
so. I feel like with the first two, we felt like the studios let Tim Burton be more Tim Burton
uh-huh.
going into the second movie, which you were a fan of. For yeah. me, it became too much, but you liked.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this with the successful movies, and it's kind of like they did that with Schumacher this time, too. They're like, yeah, Joel, you're killing it.
Yeah.
You know, unleash the Schumachery, I guess.
Schumachery, yes. For the win.
Yeah, I don't. You know, is this a thing in all superhero movies? Because I kind of feel like it happened with Sam Raimi in the second Spider-Man, but that time it worked.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
You can even kind of go Iron Man 2 with, you know, Favreau, you know.
And I didn't like Iron Man 2, so yeah. It's kind of switching back and forth on us. I'm just intrigued by that as we're going through all these movies, and an interesting thought.
Yeah.
Is it good to unleash a director, or is it good to have them overseen?
You know, I'm curious. I think the argument in some ways could even be applied to Nolan with Dark Knight Rises being a little overstuffed as well. So, but hey, at least you got three. The other two only got stabbed, two of them. Let's see. What else? So, of course, we've got a new Batman to talk about tonight. As we discussed last week, Kilmer and Schumacher didn't get along. According to a quote from Schumacher, he said, Kilmer sort of quit and we sort of fired him, whatever that means. But basically, I think from the second they finished principal photography on Batman Forever, it was like, well, Kilmer ain't coming back. So what's next? I didn't really see a lot in the way of other options for this other than David Duchovny's name was being thrown around. I don't know.
Is he doing X-Files at that point?
I think it would have been wrapping up. I mean, 97. Yeah.
Right.
I guess he still is. Yeah.
That was something I didn't watch until on VHSs in college. I never watched it, you know, in the beginnings.
I definitely don't think it would have ever fit the Schumacher.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I don't think.
Can't see that working.
I think Arnold was the most Schumacher casting. He was perfect. That's exactly what he wanted.
Oh, yeah.
That is.
I don't know if it's what fans wanted, but Schumacher got
what's this guy? He's a brilliant biochemist. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. That's who I went for.
It's literally the man famous for, you know, bulk and body.
Yeah, I mean, body chemistry, I guess. Yeah. But
not so much brains, but hey.
Yeah.
So in 96, George Clooney is still on ER. He really hadn't had his Hollywood breakout yet. He'd done, in 96, the year before this, One Fine Day, kind of a romantic comedy kind of thing with, Michelle Pfeiffer, and From Dusk Till Dawn. Oh, who's that? Do I see somebody with some bat? All I see is bat ears.
You want to say hi to my cousin?
All I see is bat ears.
Yeah, this is Tony.
Hey, Tony.
This was not planned, but he is in a Batman outfit.
So, do we have a little Buzz Lightyear going on?
Yeah, it's Batman and Buzz combining characters.
Nice. I like it.
That's a crossover
we can get on board with.
Yeah. Maybe that's happening in the new Buzz movie that we're not aware of.
Yeah, we'll get a team up.
Go sit, Bob. Go get Bob.
I just love that he's already has a bat outfit.
Yeah, you know, you say that you're not going to force your habits on your kids, and then I bought him a Captain America and a Batman outfit.
Yeah, you kind of can't help it. But.
Whoops.
We're all proud of you for that one. But yeah, so Clooney, this was kind of his first big break. Certainly the only thing I would have seen him in, well, I wouldn't have seen Dusk Till Dawn before this, but it would have been the only thing he would have done before this that I kind of saw later.
A great Tarantino film, underrated in his catalog.
Absolutely, and a good performance from
Clooney. And he does a great job as an action lead in a movie.
One of the only times he's ever really been kind of a sleazeball in a movie, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was cast deliberately to bring a lighter interpretation than either Keaton or Kilmer. The long shooting schedule was set up to allow him to jump back and forth to ER and keep shooting that. Now, both, I should say, between Clooney's schedule and Arnold's schedule, most of these actors didn't actually film scenes together in this movie. Chris O'Donnell said he hung out with Arnold offset all the time, but they never actually shot a scene together in this movie because of their schedule. So most of it was filmed with stand-ins.
Okay.
It shows.
You can see that in a lot of the fight scenes, especially that are just.
Well, even the war
choreographer had to be in charge of trying to make those work, but that was his worst 6 months on the job.
Even in a simple dialogue scene, they it's all just a line delivery. There's no emotion in any of it.
It's close frame pictures on the guys' faces. Yeah. There's no physical interaction. There's nothing going on.
It almost makes me think of like the way people talk about like Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, like the actors set for that. Like, I'm in a green room. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, these people were still on a set, but the sim seems like they have no context for any scene they're in. Let's see. The only returning hero in this one, Chris O'Donnell back for Robin, did a couple of kind of nothing, romance drama kind of things in between. And then, excuse me. I knew I shouldn't eat those nachos right before podcasting.
We're too old, man. That indigestion gets you quick.
Yeah, it really does. And rounding out our trio of heroes in this movie, Alicia Silverstone was cast as Batgirl. Of course, at that point, I had seen Clueless, and once again, recurring theme of pubescent Mason and the Batgirl.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that was a generational movie for us. Clueless was on at what, every middle school party, right? It's always on somewhere in the house.
And of course, at that point, she was basically prior to Clueless was the girl from the Aerosmith videos for the most part. I think there's an argument to be made that she is a prime candidate for As Good As It Gets, because after this, she does a kind of romantic comedy with Benicio del Toro, Excess Baggage, and a kind of romantic comedy with Brendan Fraser, Blast from the Past. And then that's about it. So I think she's going to be my winner on that score tonight. And then Mr. Freeze, we've got Ed Harris, Anthony Hopkins, and Patrick Stewart all in the running for it.
God, all of those sound like such better names for the character that I love from the comics than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I think Hopkins or Stewart really could have done the professorial kind of.
Yeah. But I don't know. Ed Harris is coming just out of Apollo 13 as the hardcore director off the space shuttle.
Yeah.
I think he could, that same feeling could be a very good Mr. Freeze as well.
Yeah.
They're just all better than who we got. So that's what we can agree on.
And nothing against Arnold. I mean, this is basically.
I love a lot of Arnold movies, even one-liner based Arnold movies, but this is just not. It doesn't hit. None of the jokes even land.
None of them.
I had a hard time finding funniest line in a movie where all they were giving me was one-liners.
Yeah. This is basically the end of Arnold's run, I think. 96, the year before this, he'd done Eraser and Jingle All the Way. Not as good as he used to be, but not terrible. 94, he did Junior and True Lies. And then, of course, I think Apex Mountain for Arnold is 91 with Terminator 2.
Terminator 2, definitely his best film.
Yeah.
Apex Arnold for me is Commando. That is a guilty pleasure of one-liner Arnold's. Those are perfect little deliveries.
Early Arnold.
Where they hold him back in the late 80s. And he doesn't get, fully released like Schumacher lets him dance all over this.
And I guess they were hoping that, yeah, Mr. One-Liner, Mr. Hasta La Vista Baby and all that could come through with this, but you can't have a one-liner when your entire dialogue is one-liner, you know, nothing sticks out. And last but not least.
It definitely sounds like Schumacher would have liked him, and then some producer was like, yeah, this is Mr. Blockbuster. We just did True Lies. He just did a stupid Christmas movie that probably earned 9 times what it was to make it. I'm sure that he was a darling at that point.
And apparently once they cast him, they basically completely rewrote the role for him, which is weird because it's like, I can see that, but at the same time, like you didn't really play to his strengths. And then last but not least, we've got Poison Ivy, played by Uma Thurman. This is coming off of Beautiful Girls and Truth About Cats and Dogs the year before. And of course, 3 years after Pulp Fiction. I had some issues with her in this movie, surprisingly. I love Uma Thurman in most stuff, but like, I don't know what she's doing. Her accent is all over the place. She's kind of British, kind of Victorian.
I was wondering if I was going to like her because I had a faint memory of liking her, but I think I liked her as a 12-year-old boy likes a redhead and a one piece. Not
and there's
as
a lot of butt shots. Happening. Let's just say it. There's a lot of butt shots.
Yeah, and then comic book Alec, like Poison Ivy is like a real powerhouse of like feminism in the comics, and she is basically a house cat in this. It's just, I really don't like what they did with a character that's supposed to be like a genius and fighting for the environment, and what she's interested in is like, oh man, I can't wait to have sex with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, like, that's all I care about.
After you freeze the world, my plants will take over. Yeah, I don't think that's how that works.
Mutant plants. They I don't know what was happening there.
All right, principal photography. Schumacher openly wanted to make this more camp, more like the Adam West Batmans. I think this is the most Adam West Batman of all the movies. Before each take, he would actually get on a bullhorn and remind everyone, remember, we're making a cartoon. I'm sorry, Joel, but I don't know if anyone told you this is actually live action. Cartoon tone, maybe, but like
that's it not... might have been better if he'd gotten cartoon voice actors, because at least they would know how to work off each other from like different rooms. Yeah. Like they would have practiced.
At least Mr.
Bring in at the same time Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy from Batman the Animated Series. Maybe they would have done a better job with your script.
My vague memory of the Mr. Freeze from that is just kind of a calm professorial voice,
you solid know? Monotone yeah. time. Not, yeah.
This is my impression of Arnold in this movie. Ah, freeze! Ah! That's all he's doing for 2 hours.
Yeah, basically. It's not a chill!
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I just hear that all the time.
O'Donnell said it felt more like making a toy commercial because they weren't ever really sure where in the movie what they were shooting, which I could see that. Let's see. I already hit on they never really shot scenes together. Okay, the release... June 20th, 1997, a budget of $125 million. That's up from $100 million on Forever.
What did they spend it on?
Yeah, well, I think Arnold got like $25 million for this. I think Clooney got about $20 million, you know.
Okay, I guess.
Once again, a lesson that, like, you know, just throwing millions of dollars at a big name to put on your poster does not always pay off. Opening weekend is $42 million. That's down from $52 million on Batman Forever. And the worldwide gross, $238 million. That's down a full $100 million from Batman Forever's $336 million. So this was pretty much egg on everyone's face. It was the ninth highest grossing film of 1997. That makes it the first Batman film we've reviewed that was not the number one grossing movie in the year it was released. Let's see, top five for that year: Men in Black, Lost World, Liar Liar, Air Force One. All right, are we ready to get into the plot?
I guess. Someone should. They never did.
Yeah, do we have to?
Yeah.
Let's wrap it. Thank you for joining us for this review of
for this fine review. But doesn't this make the best podcasteries when we get into these movies? I mean,
I think it tends to.
There are times when these are the most fun to listen to because
exactly.
We all get to laugh.
You know, some of my favorite movies, if I really did them here, I'd just be going, hey, remember that part? Wasn't that cool? Hey, remember that part? Wasn't that cool?
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be like the Chris Farley sketch from SNL back in the day. All right. The movie opens with what I would call the worst opening title sequence in all of the Batman movies. Warner Brothers logo freezing, and then these 3D flying graphics.
What was the swooshing? The swooshing noises really bugged me. I don't know what. Were they like, we just discovered IMAX sound, and so they tried to make it where it was going off the speakers in the theaters or something?
I think there actually could be something to that.
Yeah, where it's like, it's on the left, now it's on the right, how cool.
Kind of obnoxious. You know, I never really thought about it. They've really toned down those pre-movie, like, Dolby, you know, things. They used to be like this five-minute thing, and now it's just kind of...
We get it, but there's big speakers in here, guys. Yeah,
that's why we're here. So the real first scene of the movie is Batman and Robin all suiting up and arming up, and man, it is just all butts and dicks.
God piece to butt. Like, there are like medieval kings with armors with giant crotches that had less padding than Clooney and O'Donnell had in these ridiculous suits.
It's the butt shots that really get me, because it's kind of like the crotch shots you can kind of get away with, like they clipped their utility belt. But the butt shot is just, okay, that's somebody's leather butt.
That's their butt.
I think what it is they really wanted to get the Alicia Silverstone butt shot later in the movie, but it would have been too gratuitous, so they sort of, you know, evened it out and make sure they get the boys.
For 11 minutes? How long were they getting dressed? It felt like forever. You could have done one shot of Clooney. We would have been fine.
Speaking of sound effects, with every, like, up, you get a really big, like,
whoosh. Okay. So ridiculous.
I get it. And then we start off with a little quip. I want a car. Chicks dig the car, calling back to the line from the last movie. Instead, he gets a bike. Not a bad looking bike, but would you say this is the worst looking Batmobile, cousin?
Man, yeah, I would. And I include the Adam West Batmobile in that list. Even the
open T-top,
like Cadillac T-top that Adam West had, was a better vehicle than this thing.
Alfred's
first one-liner, you know, trying to bring this one back in one piece.
Alfred should throw in shade already.
Yeah, he's getting real saucy.
And I love, as soon as they drive off, Alfred is like, oh, I can barely stand. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh.
This, one of my least favorite acting parts in this whole thing. And I guess they went with Alfred being sick because he was the only character that we're not mad at the whole time. But it's like seconds after they look away, he collapses. Like, what's holding this just pure like British intentionalism? Like, he's just, no, I can't show emotion to people.
But I love it because he's like, oh, if I don't throw a little shade at Master Bruce before he leaves, he'll notice something's wrong.
Oh, he'll know.
I still have to talk a little shit, even though I'm not feeling well. Like, okay. But the boys will race off to the Gotham Art Museum. We get a little video phone call from Commissioner Gordon, for some reason dressed like a four-star general.
What? Yeah. Why is there 8 gold stars on him? Did he get promoted because he did so well in the last movie?
At this point, I was like, is he been promoted? I have
that written in the movie. That's basically why Bat's nipples on a bat suit written down. That was what I wrote down for my costume problem. Because it took me like 8 minutes to get over that he's wearing this ridiculousness. Like what a child would imagine the generals of the USSR were wearing. Like, that's it.
Like, you don't get promoted from commissioner of police to general. It's not the same chain of command.
Vice admiral to the Gotham Navy, I guess.
I almost think this was a post-production pickup, and they couldn't get like their previous Gotham police commissioner outfit. So they were like, just get something out of the prop room, throw it in there.
I like it. Warner had seen a first edit, and they were not letting Schumacher back on to the studio grounds. So they actually filmed that in Joel's garage, and that was the costume he had for him.
Well, and maybe it's just to give a little clarity to where they're going, because the commissioner says we're going to the Gotham Art Museum, where there are dinosaurs. That's not an art museum,
you know. They're an all-in-one kind of place in Gotham.
It's just museum, sure. And this is where we first meet Mr. Freeze with the Iceman cometh. My condition has left you cold to my pleas of mercy. And it's just, so according to the trivia, there are 27 ice puns in this movie. It felt like 50 to me.
Yeah, I feel bad for whoever counted that for IMDb. That is,
I would have taken the over pull. For sure. On that one. I think there are a few that they may have missed that because they don't actually qualify as puns. It just happened to have like, kind of
that's cold. Not a joke. He's just saying the word cold.
Yeah, again. Basically. Let's see. God damn, nachos. So Batman's big entrance is sliding down the dinosaur's tail. Okay. Yeah. And then,
after it's a big entrance followed by a big entrance.
Yes. Because
he goes through the ceiling first to land on the dinosaur, but that wasn't enough. Then he has to do a cool slide.
At this point,
I feel like someone had just talked to Joel about like the string action coming out of Hong Kong so that he has people on strings for these first two fight scenes.
It's terrible. It's done
so terribly that the people that are doing it look like gliding intentionally and look exactly the same as the cop getting thrown up out of the room. He just like his arms just locked by just his
straight
side.
Up,
he's like scared for his life, I guess. We gotta get this in one take.
There's a couple where Robin in particular goes from like a crouch on the floor to like flying backwards. Like you can't jump that way. It's just terrible.
It's amazing how much better we've got at stuff like that. And you brought up the Phantom Menace is another one that I think that's infamous for this. That maybe if that movie had been filmed 10 years later, it'd be a lot better because people just didn't know how to use these technologies. They're just throwing stuff in there. He's like, this is fun.
It's just funny to think of this, 2 years before The Matrix, which kind of got a handle on the wire work thing,
Yeah, they got a little bit better.
A little better. So,
they did. They went and hired someone from Hong Kong. Go to the people that are doing this.
Novel
hey,
idea.
Hey, look, they're so much better.
They know their shit. then we get basically a bunch of rejects from the Mighty Ducks.
Does Freeze have to go freeze the floor in every building they're robbing before the hockey team comes in?
Because
they're all on ice skates.
Yeah, that's
so
how
he's
got to
go
in
first, lay down the ice.
Which, of course,
then they can follow him.
Batman and Robin come prepared with built-in ice skates.
Obviously, yeah.
First time
they meet this villain, but they are always ready for an ice battle.
Exactly. I was just going to say that we established less than 60 seconds ago, they have never heard of this man before. But they got the ice skates.
Man, he is prepared for everything. That guy is a Boy Scout.
Not the only sort of costume quick change we get in this movie once again. Bad guys are basically playing hockey with a big ass diamond. You hit on the badly throwing bodies around. Just ridiculous. And then we get Mr. Freeze's little spike buggy that also launches a rocket into space.
A space shuttle / limousine / tank. It's quite the contraption. I did bring that up for you because I remember you were having a problem with the grappling hook car in Batman Forever.
Oh, God.
Like how'd you do with the space shuttle that launched out of the middle of this minivan? That's good Lord.
I'm just trying to understand, was his plan all along to actually go to space, or was that like a trap for Batman to try to shoot
just in case
space?
Space shuttle? He's like Elon Musk. He's just got an extra one down there in case he's got somewhere to go.
That can't be the most economically feasible way to dispose of a Batman, but whatever.
Well, his suit runs on diamonds, so I mean, the man's financial mind is not great. We can establish that.
Yeah, exactly. Very weird when this thing launches, Robin is just like clinging onto the outside of it. Reminder, this is a spaceship going into space, but whatever. after Batman gets frozen, Mr. Freeze bails out with these weird little butterfly wings.
The butterfly wings. I thought that was a nice, obviously he would have the daintiest of flight suits that I've ever seen.
It was cute. It was cute. It looked like a little
toy. It looked like a brooch that your grandmother would wear on the, and it's just like, oh, that's such a nice brooch. Is there a story behind that, maybe? Like,
overall, what do you think of the look of Mr. Freeze? All the Freeze puns and the Arnold of it all aside. I didn't mind the suit.
It was a little over the top for me just because I'm used to a much more simple, like I liked even at that point and even going forward, the Batman, the animated series aesthetic for Mr. Freeze, which was kind of more of just a like a wetsuit.
Yeah,
a helmet.
That's right.
And he had a Freeze gun, but
it's
wasn't
a battle
this, like,
suit.
Yeah, he wasn't like a glimmering diamond, like trying to draw attention. Like Liberace could have designed this battle suit. Like, it was a little calm for him, but that's about it.
Well, yeah, yeah, I know. What we did, I haven't even talked about the blue glitter paint, and they actually put a blue LED light inside of his mouth and all this.
Yeah.
I got to say, you know, ballsy for somebody at Arnold's level at this point to do the 6 hours a day in the makeup chair kind of thing. But, you know, he did it. So from the spaceship, after Freeze bails out, Batman and Robin surf the doors out of this thing. We actually get a cowabunga in this movie.
Yeah, no. He says cowabunga. I don't know. I have no comment. I don't.
You cannot make a Ninja Turtles reference in your Batman movie like 5 years after the Ninja Turtles were relevant, you know? Also couldn't help but notice in these shots, I think these were the first like all CG character models that we ever get when they're flying down, and they way overuse that in this movie.
Well, I mean, I guess they had to, because none of the actors were ever there. So,
well, yeah,
you gotta draw something.
Once again, like let's just make it animated, guys. Like,
it's better animated.
Let's see. I do like Robin getting frozen by Freeze, and the way Batman like kind of picks up the frozen.
Yeah, the deadlifting. I mean, he's at least like 210, right? Yeah. Like, he's pretty built.
Plus 100 pounds of ice, you know?
And that leather suit is not nothing.
No.
You know? It's got a lot of codpiece in it, so that padding's another 15 pounds.
But he defrosts the Robin sickle and everything.
By shooting a laser into a vat of water. Brilliant heating system.
Lots of vats in this movie. Lots of vats. I think this is one of two tank vat dunks for Robin.
Yeah.
And at least one in flashback with Mr. Freeze. All right, so this is where we cut to the weird Aztec-looking temple that turns out to be a lab.
What a transition, by the way. Nothing. All right, we got him, and then we're in a jungle now.
They don't even flash like a South America.
It gives you nothing. It's just the outside of a building.
Yeah, I think after the fact, later in the movie, they say something like, "Oh, down at our South American facilities or something." But initially you're just like, "What the fuck? Where am I?" So we get this crazy boss, mad scientist. Strapping a skinny little criminal down, and we get to line. He's injecting him with a super soldier serum, codenamed Venom. And Stan Lee's like, "Call the lawyers! Get the lawyers on the phone! They're using Venom and super soldier serum. I'm not okay with it."
Yeah, the treatment of all the villains is bad, but Bane is. I mean, besides the Joker, probably the best Batman villain in the comics.
Yeah, he's famous back,
for being the only one that ever actually beats Batman.
Yeah.
Like, in one point, he snaps his back. And in this, we get a guy whose best line, I think, is when he says bomb while setting bombs later.
I had that note. Why does he have to say bomb every time he sets the bomb?
Every time he sets the bomb down. Is that like the activation? It's a vocal activation?
And even if he has to do it, Schumacher, you don't have to show it. That many times. But yeah, they definitely did Bane.
They did
dirty.
Bane so wrong.
They basically just needed a heavy for this film to go with Poison Ivy. Like, just give her a goon, a thug, or whatever. Like,
she says that later as a line. Like, that's why every Poison Ivy action figure comes with this guy.
Oh, God, yeah. I did note in this scene a lot of the green fog stuff in the air again. He just really loved that aesthetic from the Riddler and was just like, fuck it, throw some more green spotlights in there. But he overcooks him and he goes full Frankenstein's monster. Uma calls the doctor a psycho. You won't be able to get a job teaching high school chemistry. So I guess he'll just have to go sell some meth.
I do also like I should have said earlier, but when Ivy's explaining who she is in her little like 2 minutes before we go into the Bane laboratory.
Yeah, weird little monologue.
She's like, if only that guy would stop stealing my stuff for his secret Gilgamesh character, and then it's just like a door in front of her that she walks into immediately. Like, how long have you been worried about this? Like 8 minutes?
Yeah.
Is this your first investigation?
It wasn't even latched.
Yeah, there's not a lock. Like, how secret was he keeping it?
And meanwhile, and it doesn't age very well, but like inside this room, there's like this row of you know, yeah. mostly is
we're trying to make it look like Saddam Hussein exactly. and three guys from the USSR and exactly. a Chinese guy.
Exactly.
I nailed it. Got those racist stereotypes in. Good job.
Yeah, nailed it. They all want a Bane. Let me tell you, this went so well. So eventually the crazy doctor pushes this table of chemicals and snakes. Okay.
Yeah, where are the snakes? Why is Poison Ivy with snakes? Her thing is plants. Why is Schumacher's like, you know, it'd be cooler if she also had snakes.
Yeah. And meanwhile, with all this stuff on top of her, there's like a hole opens in the earth that sucks her. Yeah,
she fell into quicksand. It was a dangerous part of the laboratory. They chose to build on that. But, you know, science is science. You can't argue with it.
I think this has to be the most ridiculous origin in any of these 90s Batmans that we've seen.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, back in the Batcave, we get the backstory on Mr. Freeze's wife and the introduction of this whole McGregor syndrome thing. Important to note, they do mention, I think Mr. Freeze's wife has McGregor syndrome stage 4. Later in this movie, we find out Alfred has McGregor syndrome phase 1, and it's apparently fatal at phase 1. So why do you have phases 2 through 4 if you're going to die?
Don't you worry about that, but it's a whole different thing. She's probably more tired and less quippy.
Ah, okay.
It really harms your sarcasm level once you get to phase 3.
Once your heart stops, the quips die.
Once you're frozen, maybe that's stage 4. You freeze the person and hope for the best.
And like I said, this is where we see Freeze falling into a big vat of something. It's just kind of like
the best Arnold noise of the whole movie, because he does it like, oh, and rolls over. Like you can see him rolling. Like it's a very intentional fall. It's like the stunt coordinator was not there that day.
It's like something out of Twins or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Danny DeVito would have been a better as his twin from that. Let's bring him back to play Mr. Freeze.
So this is where we first start to get a little friction between Batman and Robin, and Alfred's talking to Bruce about trust.
Family.
Yeah.
We're a family. Yeah, that's a recurring thing for them, it seems.
Familia. It's a Fast and the Furious movie all of a sudden. But then we go back to the weirdo lab for the rise of Poison Ivy. Yeah, she got sucked into some quicksand, came out sexy and horny and deadly and all kinds of stuff in some spandex and whatnot.
Yeah, her only power that she got, by the way, is poison kissing. Like everything else is just like she still grows some plants. That's not like she got a superpower.
So her little horny dust that she sprays, that's like some powder she mixed up.
Well, Arnold explains it to her because apparently his sense of smell, he's pheromone powder turns normal men into animals.
Yeah, it doesn't work on the cold hearted. I'm too cold
or whatever. Yeah, exactly.
But once again, Master Bruce, as soon as Master Bruce leaves, Alfred's like, oh God, oh Jesus Christ. If I show any weakness, Master Bruce will have me put down.
Yeah, he's going to have him caned to the backyard for behaving badly.
Yeah. And then we go to Mr. Freeze's hideout. Now, I got to say, of all of the misfit crews in Gotham City, I think the worst deal is the goon squad for Mr. Freeze. They're freezing their ass off. They're frozen dinners. And he's trying to make them listen to Christmas tunes all the time.
Yeah, they were trying to do Mr. Heat Miser, Mr. White Christmas, like is the battle line. And he's getting really frustrated. And why is he wearing such a thick smoking jacket in the cold room? Because it's just for look, obviously, because the temperature is set for him.
Your idea is to not warm up, you know?
And he's got this cigar that apparently is fine in the frozen weather as well. That didn't cool off.
Wasn't it like white or something?
It's white on white. It was the same blue as like his skin. Like I think they just used the same paint. Just like, keep painting. That's great. He's got self-themed cigars.
Oh yeah, I just imagine the goons having to sit there and paint his cigars. You know, the boss likes everything, you know, white or blue.
He's got to be this blue.
That's all we can do.
And then there's who's it, Victoria?
Or Vivica Vanessa? A. Fox.
Vivica A. Fox, that's who it is.
Did you catch the character name?
Oh, no, I did not catch the character name because I was still just getting over the smoking jacket and the poor guy he freezes.
Well, first of all, I should just say, I don't know why she's here. I think it's literally just to be like, oh, hey.
Hot girl the room.
She was in Independence Day last year. Sure, I remember that. So the character's name is Miss B. Haven. Misbehaving. Yeah.
Oh, that's like a good gamer tag. That is not, that is well done. Yeah. Yeah. Why does he have this scantily clad woman in the freezing room next to his wife?
The whole point
is he's super loyal to his wife, but also the Vivica's in the room. That's a little different. You understand that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100%. No, this was Schumacher going, hey, you know what worked was, Debbie Mazar and Drew Barrymore. So let's
it did work there.
Yeah. And then the bad guy just needs a cute sidekick thing. But am I mistaken? This is her one scene in the movie?
No, she's only in there for those like 14 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
She doesn't help out with a fight later. She doesn't come in as a minion.
Nothing. You can kind of tell.
Get out of the film as quick as you can.
Yeah, yeah. Fortunately, most people don't remember she was in this, so she lucked out. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, well. Back at Wayne Manor, young blonde at the door. Oh, that actually jogged my memory there a little bit. You can tell that a lot of this movie was kind of chopped up. I think Vivica Fox thing is an example of it. Mm-hmm. You don't bring in her in for just one scene. Also, Alicia Silverstone, apparently it's well publicized that they cut a bunch of the stuff they filmed with her. She was supposed to be a much bigger part of the movie. And sure. I remembered her being a much bigger part of the movie. But apparently there's this big controversy where she gained a little weight during production and didn't fit in her Batgirl costume. And the studio publicized it, and there was this whole big thing. And, you know, eating disorder, real sad, I mean, terrible stuff for her. But you can just tell that there's stuff missing with her story too. So I think there's a lot left on the cutting room floor with this whole movie.
Well, that's rough to hear that you got that treatment. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So here is her introduction. She's knocking on the door.
Perfect English accent, by the way. Is she English?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Is she from England? She's going to Oxbridge Academy, which I guess we can assume where
kind of an Oxford
where Alfred went. I'm pretty sure that's on the other side of the ocean.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
She makes no attempt at an accent.
One of my favorite moments in the whole movie is when she rings the doorbell and both Dick and Bruce look at each other like, what's that? What do we do about that? I don't know. Where's Alfred? Where's Alfred out? Nobody's answering the door. What's going on? You know, it's like without Alfred, they just like are fucking lost. Yeah, they cease to function. And I just love, he comes out of the like little back closet or something. Is like, I must have dozed off. Bruce kicks him. You lazy old fuck.
Get to the door.
Yeah. And of course he shuffles his way over there and Robin has opened the door. Does a, oh, please be looking for me. You know, he's pretty hard up for it. And you can tell Uncle Alfred is none too excited about his niece being around these two horn dogs. And she says goodnight and then basically sneaks out to steal one of the bikes. Her whole storyline is weird. I don't really know where to hit it. We'll dive into her when we get back to the motorcycle race. But for now, so Poison Ivy is in town with her driver Bane, looking like Ninja Turtle.
Bane's little driver's hat is my favorite. Uh-huh. That is so fantastic.
I really got Raphael.
He's just like drive. He doesn't do anything else.
I really got Raphael in a trench coat going to the movies vibes from this.
Absolutely.
And then we go to the Gotham Observatory where Bruce is donating a new telescope with his girlfriend Elle McPherson. And then we get a whole bunch of just quippy, ha, just don't point it at my bedroom. It's like,
okay. And then his response to the marriage line is so awkward.
You hear him poop. Like you hear him poop himself.
Like he had just passed gas. He's like, oh, they caught me. Yeah, exactly. Was that on the microphone?
Yeah.
And it's just like, I could, Clooney did owe people money for how bad it was watching this. Like, if you're going to be Batman and the worst part in a Batman that stars Arnold Schwarzenegger as a biochemist, like, you're really hurting me here, bud.
You know, I was kind of hoping since I hadn't seen it, I'd find Clooney as like, well, at least Clooney was good. No, he's not. He is not good enough.
No redeeming. Even in the, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but even in some more serious parts, I had some real issues with actor choices.
But then this is where Ivy barges in disguise and starts trying to sell Bruce Wayne on her, like, we're going to detoxify the planet by, you know, killing humans and stuff.
This is a part where Poison Ivy as a character is just like, she's not that batshit crazy,
yeah,
pun intended, but and it's, she's just a great character. If you, for listeners out there, I highly recommend the Harley Quinn series off of HBO, an animated series. She plays the second lead in it. But man, this is just the worst iteration of a great character in so many different venues.
There are moments where it feels like they're trying to do Selina Kyle stuff with her from Batman Returns, particularly in this scene where she's like kind of dressed up.
Trying to build a little repartee between the two of them. Doesn't work.
Doesn't work at all.
Don't worry though, Batman, after that rant, still invites her to an event.
Yes. After
she's like, yeah, we should murder like 11 million people. And he's like, cool, here's a, come to this observatory
party. Come to my auction where we are auctioning the, I guess, Wayne family diamonds, which we find out later are called the Heart of Isis. Okay.
they're just unfortunate like, hey, now. Did not age well there.
Didn't age well. They were just reaching for something that sounded vaguely like ice. And with Isis on that one. Weird scene. They're auctioning off some young women who are wearing the diamonds to a bunch of old horn dogs that are like,
Also, is there a race flag on the African American woman being the Magnolia that felt like vaguely racist?
Oh, not vaguely. Not so vaguely.
Like,
and
the horn dog going after it. I was like, This is going to be some real plantation vibes, guys. Like, I'm not comfortable with what you guys are setting up here, Schumacher.
Not at all. That
left a bad taste in my mouth in this scene. And then, I mean, it didn't get better.
Yeah. Of all the things that just were terrible in this movie, that one just didn't age well at all.
Yeah.
But let's see, we get this. So the whole thing is interrupted by this weird, creepy pink gorilla. And everybody's just like, ooh, what is that? I don't know if you noticed the shot where they zoom in real close while the gorilla is taking off its gloves.
And yeah.
So you see the glove come off and it's the female hand, the other glove come off, but it's real tight. So you just see these big purple gorilla nipples in the shot.
I feel like it's supposed to be like a humorous reference to, the girls that do the burlesque dancing, because the gloves for them is like a really big, like sexy thing.
Sure, yeah.
Like, I think he's trying to be really funny here, and what we got was gorilla nipples.
Yeah.
I bet he's sitting there filming it, like, nailing it.
This is a
great scene. Everyone's going to get how funny this is.
It's kind of a Marilyn Monroe kind of thing.
Yeah, like the striptease from the 30s, you know. She's going to come out with paisleys over her nipples or something, but no, that's not what happens. Well, I mean, it's close, but not all.
And meanwhile, she blows pink boner dust over all of them, and everybody just goes nuts.
That's the right name for it, because everyone is lost all blood fluid, no blood in their brains after that stuff floats around the room.
And this is where Batman and Robin start. Really, the running bit that just made me want to throw up every time when they're like arguing over Poison Ivy, and this is the,
like, the money. I'll borrow it from you.
Oh, yeah.
And then he shows us the Bat credit card. Never leave home without it. It's like, if it had actually said Visa on there or something, then maybe I would have been like, okay, some product placement. But it doesn't. It just says Bat card.
Oh, I thought it said American Express. I thought that was.
Oh, I didn't see it. I didn't
study it close. I did notice the expiration is forever, which that doesn't even make sense. If it doesn't expire forever, you know what I mean? It's fucking dipshits.
The credit card was not great. I was like, it doesn't look good for you guys to be buying this woman. Like,
no.
As a superhero, like, just letting everyone, hey, just so you all know, I am filthy fucking rich. That is how this works.
Right. And meanwhile, Bruce Wayne is like, he's like, I'll bid 1 million. Robin bids 2. And then Batman goes, you don't have it. 3 million. Like, well, if he doesn't have it, why'd you just add another million to, like, you just upped your own bid $2 million.
Nothing here is making any sense.
All the blood flow was diverted.
Yeah, it was gone. Yeah. With the pink boner dust. I like that title. Yeah.
And then we get this pretty horrible chase scene after Freeze comes in and starts freezing everything. This may be the worst thing in this movie for me, is when the Batmobile and the Robin cycle chase the Freeze crew down one of these gothic statues.
Yeah, they're like, huge, and it looks like the Colossus of Rhodes that they have holding up this building.
I mean, we are just all CG at this point. It looks stupid. It doesn't make any sense.
I will bring up one of the moments I laughed the hardest in the little fight scene when Freeze goes in there. I don't know if you caught it, but Chris O'Donnell like throws a wheel at one of the minions, and then you get the Looney Tunes banana peel slip sound as he falls down. And it's the worst sound effect placement I think I've ever heard.
Kind of a little yoink.
It's just
kinda,
the banana peel. It goes, woo, you know, and then he falls backwards like he's sliding along something. There's no noise when he hits the ground as well, which really bugged me. His foot slipped. That made noise. Nothing else.
There's a lot more of that in this movie, similar to in Forever when Jim Carrey's wrecking the Batcave and you throw in some baseball sound effects and a spit sound effect and all that.
All of a sudden he's hit a bowling ball. The pins are falling. Exactly. It's like, who's running this?
Schumacher. No. but yeah, so pretty quickly, Bruce... Actually, I can't skip past this. Before Bruce does this big like ramp up and chase Mr. Freeze to catch him, he decides that the jump for whatever reason is too dangerous for Robin. So he like remote hacks, shuts his little bike down, which I want to say is probably more dangerous than just letting him make the jump.
Yeah, but it looks like he's going to slide to his death. Yeah. Like I think you needed to do that a lot earlier if you were going to do it.
But one of the funniest shots in the movie is Chris O'Donnell looking up to camera, just going, ah!
Yeah, he's so distraught.
But like, it's such an impotent, Chris O'Donnell did not know why he was screaming. He was just told, hey, scream at the camera. it's terrible.
That's if he had just watched, Batgirl die, then maybe that tone would have been appropriate. Not, I just didn't get to make a jump.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You won't let me have any fun, kind of thing.
Yeah. And once again, he is just ruined as a character. Just.
This is the one I can see really churning your stomach.
Howdy. Yeah, it's hard. It was hard to watch.
And this is where we're fighting over Poison Ivy. No, you're just jealous because she likes me. It's fuck, are we 14? What is going on?
It's a very different dynamic. They're like squabbling young brothers in this one, where the Batman and Robin dynamic has always been teacher and mentor. And there is a way to rebel against a teacher, but Clooney's never serious enough of a character for him to be thought of in any sort of teacher or father figure way. And O'Donnell's probably only 3 years, 4 years younger than him anyway. So
yeah, probably not by much.
I don't know where that's coming off, but yeah, all of those arguments are just mind-numbing.
And then this whole movie also, Robin is having this little tantrum about, I don't want to live in your shadow. Nobody appreciates me. I'm going to be the savior of Gotham. I'm going out on my own. And this is the moment where he's like, why do we always do it your way? And Bruce is basically like, because I pay for everything and it's my house.
Yeah.
Real dad energy from Bruce.
That's some real dad energy. Yeah.
And then we get Alfred leaving a recorded message for his brother Wilfred. This whole Wilfred thing is weird. I had this weird memory in my head when this Wilfred stuff came up. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Alfred dies, and then Wilfred comes and replaces him. No, that didn't happen. So I don't know why we're talking about Wilfred this whole movie.
They're just trying to come up with some reason for him to be talking dramatically, I guess. And it's about the floating city and in the floating Maharaja in India. It's such an insane idea anyway. But apparently his brother's also a butler. It's the family practice, not just Alfred that's done it.
And the gist of it is he's basically like, oh, I'm going to die. And if I do, my brother is going to have to come take my place.
Yeah. As we said earlier, they are useless without Alfred. They cannot figure out the doorbell. So maybe he's right.
Hilarious that Alfred is dying. So you're going, no, it'll be okay. My brother will give up his life to come be Bruce's butler.
Yeah, obviously. It's an easy jump.
But Bruce consults him on the dispute with Robin. And then we have this really weird shot where Bruce looks out a window. And we've got another
of the little flashbacks, right? Like the grave is right there.
Yeah, the grave is right there at the window, making it look like the window is ground level. Just such a weird shot decision. Meanwhile, Barbara is returning with the bike she stole. Robin busts her, but she flips him with a little judo move. let's see, Arkham Asylum, where Freeze is being hauled in on an old refrigerator. I did kind of like that production design.
And I've got my Guys Who Went On to Greater Things by Flash Thompson role is the two guards that come into here. One of them I bet you recognize was Jesse the Body Ventura.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Hey, yeah, Arnie, I'm goes, here goes for on you, buddy. To be the governor of Minnesota. Maybe not as great in other movies, but he, you know, his career got better. And the other one is a gentleman named Rolf Muller, who is my favorite character actor in Gladiator.
Yes, he plays Hogan.
Yeah, he plays the German Hogan the Germanic.
That was the weird, because I knew Gladiator. I knew Ventura, but the other guy, I was like, there's something about that guy.
I did the same. I was like, no, that guy is also someone. But yeah.
Weird costuming choice. They decided to give him an eye patch, but whatever, it works. So Ivy and Bane, meanwhile, go back down to Blacklight Town from Batman Forever to play some laser tag with Robin's old pals. Bane basically just tears through them and they decide to redecorate. I don't know why we needed this sequence.
What does she say? She says, this floor is terrible. And it doesn't really do anything about the floor. He just kicks a hole in it so that there's dirt directly underneath.
So she
which is how buildings work, by the way, guys.
There's
soil directly under your plywood, let me tell you. But
hey, I don't know. Maybe in this fucking Gotham.
Yeah, the Turkish baths were not well designed.
Let's see. Meanwhile, it's date night at Wayne Manor, and Bruce is getting some pressure to put a ring on it, but he fucks up and calls her Ivy. Guys, you never want to do that.
Especially not Elle McPherson, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Swing and a miss.
He was trying
to hit that magic again that he got with Nicole Kidman, as like we talked about, like as the Batman girl, where it was a real, you know, a positive part of the movie.
Yeah, but she's just arm candy in this. I mean,
she has no character to herself. They have no real scenes, and George Clooney doesn't even seem to be acting with her anyway.
Two very attractive people. This is like the least attractive kissing of two very attractive people. I've ever seen in my life.
There's just zero sexual chemistry here.
Nothing to it.
It's just it was a roof.
This is where Robin sees Barbara sneaking out again, and this time decides to go after her. So we go to the motorcycle rally where Coolio is taking bets from the Clockwork Orange gang.
I love the gangs in this, like the movie Warriors. They're so ridiculous and over the top of the corner. And also props to Coolio for being a precursor to other greats, Ja Rule and Ludacris, who take money bets races as rappers in later movies. I did not remember him being the originator of this role, but now, you're welcome, Chris Bridges. Coolio paved the way.
He had to have some lines that got cut or something, because it's just such a weird, like, oh, that's Coolio, but like, that's it.
It just tells you the amount of money. It's like, it's just $2,400 or whatever, and then it's gone.
And I mean, this is less than a year after Dangerous Minds. I mean,
Gangster's Paradise. We all know every word to that song at this point.
Exactly. But ridiculous little bike race here. I guess the illegal racing circuit is just off Batman and Robin's usual beat. I mean, this is some elaborate, dangerous shit that they don't seem to be cleaning up.
They're not worried about that. Okay. It's their own choice. They're racers. They believe in free choice of death races. That's fully supported.
Deadbeat commissioner didn't do anything about it.
His admiralty is not, can't get over to that side of the street.
His admiralty. The music in this sequence, I think this is the first like EDM sequence that we get in Batman.
I guess it's just trying to match the colors, but I don't, it's just nothing good.
No, thank you. That phase of music didn't age well, if you ask me. Let's see. Dick saves Barbara in this really goofy, like, I caught my foot on a piece of rebar or whatever.
He's like kind of doing the splits upside down, but I don't really know how it's working. And they also are not very good at riding motorcycles because there's just a little bit of fire on the ground, and then they're both like, we're dying. I feel like if you're a superhero on a motorcycle all the time, that shouldn't be able to do it. Like, that's not what's going to knock you off a bike to the point that you're going to die.
Well, yeah, and we're also told that she, like, has been winning these races all week, but now she's a damsel in distress.
Oh, man, did they set her up. It was all the really cool Clockwork Orange game. They've been working the long con.
Oh, the long con, I see. Okay, yeah.
Lady Pennyworth there. Well, you know,
Because she's Barbara Gordon in the comics, but I don't know what
she's Barbara in this, but they never gave her a last name. And I looked it up, and it was just Barbara and Batgirl. And I was like, I'm mad at you, Shoemaker. Yeah.
We have this weird back and forth where she's talking about, I've saved up enough money to take Alfred away from this dismal life of servitude. First of all, dismal life of servitude, nobody fucking talks that way. but almost as bad is Dick's like paternalism, like, well, he's happy and well cared for, you know.
We let him live kindly here on the land. It's nice.
Oh, thank you, good slave master. You know?
Yeah, it's got that vibe, doesn't it? He's like, what? No, he's happy. He loves washing my underwear. He tells me all the time.
It's just such a weird, I don't know. And she's saying Alfred is sick, and then Bruce, who's just been apparently eavesdropping on this conversation, is like, no, he's dying from the shadows. also, in this shot, he is once again in his bathrobe. Bruce Wayne spends three scenes of this movie just kind of in his bathrobe. Weird choice. You know, we talked about the white tee tucked into sweatpants with Val Kilmer, but then too far the other direction.
This way, and his exercise clothes even. They don't look like great exercise clothes in this one either. Bruce does not understand gym wear. It's not something that you deal with at Wayne Manor, I guess.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to Under Armour yet, I guess.
This is one of the scenes that his acting choice really bugs me, because every time he says something that should be serious, he like wryly smiles afterwards, and you're like, okay, what are you trying to convey to me?
And the opposite is true. Every time it's supposed to be a serious line, a joke line, he plays a deadpan.
Yeah, deadpan completely. And I'm just, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what they were thinking, but it certainly didn't make me feel like he gave any shits about Alfred being sick.
No,
like,
yeah.
As an actor, as a person, you know, I'm convinced George Clooney has never lost anyone in his life. He's lived a very beautiful life.
Yes,
he has no idea what it would be like to have a sick ailing family member.
At this point, he just seems a little cranky that the dusting is not getting done. Basically,
yeah, he's actually angry that the doorbell didn't get rang on time.
Yeah. Let's see. So Ivy poses as Freeze's sister and gets let into his cell to see him. I don't think that's how visitation works at any prison or asylum ever anywhere. And then, she takes out Jesse Ventura and the guy from Gladiator. We get this really weird line from Arnold. That's, oh, yes, a laundry service that delivers. Wow.
And Bane just running in again. And he's like, shirts. I don't know what the word is that he's chosen for this moment, but. What a conversation between intellectual giants from the DC Comics, Bane and Mr. Freeze.
Well, and even with Ivy, you know, he's talking about, I need the diamonds for my hideout. And she has this weird little line that's, oh, I'll help you grab your rocks. Like,
the sex kitten that she turns into here is like shit that you would need to pay for someone who's supposed to like hate all men for destroying the planet. I don't know why the one you like is the one that would kill everything you love.
Uh-huh. Like, and once again, the dead wife thing, he's you know.
Yeah, also still there. Why is the Ice Age guy the one that a lady that loves with plants completely obsessed with? It's the one that you can't have, I guess.
So then they finally break a hole in the building, and three bad guys jump off the tallest building ever anywhere and escape. You know, there was some water down there.
He did not use his butterfly wings that time, which I found interesting. They were not attached.
No, you didn't need it. I mean, there's water down there. It's fine.
What's his line is like, I hope Mr. Bane can swim. They just jump to their deaths. Movie over.
Mr. Bane. But Batman and Robin get the news of the escape, talk about how they are both over her. Ridiculous line here when she's like, I didn't need her. Great stems though. Yeah, buds too. All right, we had 50 ice puns. Now we got to get some flower puns in here. That are also referencing a woman's, you know, bits. Wow. They find Mrs. Freeze hidden behind the ice cream, but Ivy gasses them again. Freeze powers back up. Batman and Robin meet Bane. They kind of fight Bane while avoiding kissing Ivy.
Very well timed. All the landings of Bane interrupt the kissing.
Yeah, but Bane will hold him for a second, then kind of disappear. Then throws pop back him.
I think he's jealous of Ivy too. He's trying to interrupt the kisses with the bodies of the people he's pummeling.
Boner.
Boner does.
So yeah, Robin gets all jealous again. I did like Batman dumping him in a big fat of green slime here.
Yeah, I was like, is this a Joker reference? Like, is he turning the Robin into was Schumacher's third going to have like an evil Chris O'Donnell? Because I would have loved it. I think that's the only way it could have gone.
And remember, we're in like an old ice cream factory, so yeah, I think it's mint obviously. Chocolate chip or something. I don't know.
It looks delicious. I mean, it's my favorite flavor, but.
But once again, Robin says he's going solo. Ivy unplugs Mrs. Freeze, but tells
Freeze. At this point, just fucking go, O'Donnell. Like, I'm done with your whining. Like, yeah, finish the job. Get out the building.
You realize without any of my cool toys, you're just a bro. So,
yeah.
have fun with that. And then once again, we get the big plan is he's going to freeze the world. Her mutant plants will take it over, and they will be the only two humans left, because that sounds like a good plan for anybody for anything. I don't know why either of them would be interested in that outcome. That's not good character building. So then we go back to Alfred. He's not doing so good. We get a doctor that says, oh, he's got stage 1 of McGregor syndrome. Oh, what a coincidence. He has the same thing that this creepy doctor we're chasing is also researching. Bruce is going to the telescope dedication. And then he says he's going after Ivy and Freeze alone. And Dick actually says the line, she loves me and not you.
Oh, man.
Barf.
I think the real problem I have with this is, does the boner dust last that long? Or is Chris O'Donnell just like that excited about getting his first boner? It's like that is longer lasting for him because he's never experienced sexuality.
I was going to say, big virgin energy for this 37-year-old Batman.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Robin.
Yeah, I'm just not understanding why his character would still be amped up. Though, I mean, Clooney acts like he's like, I can't stop thinking about her, you know? And at the date scene, he gets her confused. So I guess it lasts forever. They're just in love with this woman forever. And then the effects of the pink butter dust are insane.
Bruce is like, Robin, it's 1997. There's porn on the internet now. Check it out.
There's a Playboy website, sir. And... we've all been there. Like, just stop pretending that we haven't.
Alfred asks Barbara to find his brother Wilfred and give him a mixtape that he made for him.
it's a cool burn CD, man. You know, the CDR reads well for.
That Memorex, man, that's the way to go.
Schumacher is up to date on how computers work. That's what we get.
But it takes Barbara all of 5 seconds before she's like, nah, I'm going to look at this anyway. Bruce checks in on Alfred, tells him he loves him. Actually, kind of a sweet moment here. I think it's mostly the work of like kind of imagining all the Batmans in this moment, you know, almost like transposing Clooney for Keaton in this moment.
Yeah.
But I did think it was like one moment of the film where Clooney actually expressed an emotion.
Yeah, I think he was trying, but then he went in for a weird neck kiss that I thought
that was weird. That was
very strange and killed it at the end. I was like, hey, that's another weird choice, man. I don't know what you're doing here.
You'd like to pass that off as like, well, Bruce just doesn't know how to express emotion. No, they didn't.
Well, he wouldn't lick Alfred's neck. I think that wouldn't have been. I don't think that would have been the first choice of someone who was emotionally constipated.
Kiss me on my neck before I die, Master.
Yeah, Bruce. It's a weird way. Then we have some other questions about Alfred. If that's what's happening.
There's a quick shout out to the character they introduced in the Adam West show, the aunt that lived with them, because it would just be weird if an old British guy and two younger dudes
two young men were living together.
Let's see. But of course, she finds the password to the CD, which is Peg, which is written on the picture right next to the computer.
Well, the man's got McGregor syndrome, and he's 146. So, like, him keeping his password right there, I think I'm going to let go.
That's
the most realistic part of this movie.
Ready Player One, you know, Ben Mendelsohn has his login right there on his chair or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Post-it note kind of thing. But of course, it contains all the Batman files, which I guess Wilfred is also a skilled costume maker, weapons designer.
Mechanic. All part of the standard Maharaja Butler training.
Oxbridge has a lot of work service programs.
Their extracurriculars are intense at Oxbridge. They are doing some good work.
So now we get Freeze and Bane showing up at the observatory, and all of a sudden Bane is just kind of working for Freeze. It's kind of weird. We do get a really stupid line. Mr. Bane, no matter what anyone tells you, it is the size of the gun that counts. Like, how many genitalia puns do we need in this movie, for fuck's sake?
And then Bane validates it just by going, gun, and nodding.
Yes.
He gets it. He gets it, Arnold. You guys are on the same page.
And then suddenly there's a big Robin light in the sky, which I guess we skipped over that. Bane ripped up the bat signal, and I guess they converted it.
But they put it back together. They had a lot of red paint glass that they were working with in the Turkish bath.
Yeah, and they both seemed...
the ability to reassemble it and move it over there.
Yeah, totally qualified for that.
I just like the idea in my head. I was like, did Bane just like walk that to where they are?
Yeah.
They show him sort of picking up the light, and then the scene ends.
Yeah, and it stays on after he rips it out.
Is he just walking down the highway with the bat lights, and the cops are like
throwing it from roof to throwing it from roof to roof.
Exactly.
And then so we get the Robin light, and Robin once again, terrible line reading. She wants me, not you. I do like Clooney's comeback here. I don't know if it's intentional, but the line reading on, she wants to kill you, dick. He really put some mustard on that dick.
There was some emphasis on that syllable, and it's great.
And then we get the, I'm asking you, friend, partner, brother, will you trust me now? And this was that moment where I was like, I don't know if I ever really saw them as brothers. I mean, you know the comics. It was always more of a.
It's really off-putting for me. Dick Grayson is a ward and a student.
A mentee.
Batman. He grows to become like the. Depending on which comics, you know, the multiverse of creations that comics spread out into, but he becomes the only person that Bruce like actively loves.
Yeah.
But it's always as a son and a student and someone that I cared for. Not they're not partners.
I think you're right. The age gap between O'Donnell and Clooney here is hard to separate.
It's hard to deal with.
Yeah. So at the observatory, Bane has to say bomb every time he sets one down, and he does it about 17 times. And then the telescope begins to freeze everything. Meanwhile, Barbara is back in the Batcave, and she finds out, I can't even think about it without laughing. Alfred's face comes off on the screen, and he says, I programmed my brain algorithm into the Bat computer. What?
I also like that it skips a little bit. So
it's got that Max Headroom stutter.
It was like, is that a programmer error? Or is that your brain algorithm? What was skipped there?
We need a RAM upgrade here, guys.
He was on that 25.6K modem. You know, you need to go all the way up to the 64.
Fucking dial up, man. And then, he's like, I know I was dying, but I took the liberty of making you a gratuitous bats girl suit.
And now we return to more crotch and nipples.
We get butt, crotch, and very gratuitous tit shot on this particular bat suit. So Dick arrives at Ivy's lair, and this weird, like, I want us to be together. No, tell me your plan and I'll kiss you. And they smooch, but turns out I've got rubber lips on. Okay. This whole movie, does the boner dust not work now too?
Yeah, don't worry about that. Okay.
Inconsistencies
are what this movie is based on.
All right. So Batman and Robin get tied up, and then Batgirl arrives. Of course, we have to have another slow-mo drop through a glass ceiling superhero landing. It's just what we do in these movies. We get this weird, like, you know, fake feminism kind of, oh, you give chicks like you give women a bad name.
You just showed the camera your nipples, Silverstone. Like, I hope that you maybe the rest of your character that they cut was a proud voice of feminism. But like you said, the studio threw under the bus for an eating disorder. And yeah, they had this shot. Like, this movie is not a good representation of feminism in any direction.
No,
it's terrible film for both of these characters.
So this is one of those, like, how fucking dare you try to
validate what you've been doing.
Don't try to say something in the middle of this farce.
That's where I was. I started, my poor wife could hear me just yelling at the television, and she was like, haven't you seen this before? And I was like, it's been a while.
But yeah, she basically kicks her into the plant that she just got out of and controlled 5 minutes ago. It kind of looks like it eats her or something, but
yeah, I don't know what happened there. This was my problem with her powers before, because like, did she control the mutant plants when she got swallowed up by the snakes? But no, obviously not, because it eats her.
I mean, she literally was hiding in that cocoon when Robin got there. Yeah,
it was totally
fine
before, but now it's hungry. Like, if you kick it in there aggressively, then it's going to eat whatever lands. It's a matter most, of how, like, you sit down.
We need to move on to other things, so we're literally just kicking you out of this movie.
Yeah, you're done here.
And this was so bad. Bruce Wayne says, who are you? And she's like, oh, shucks, Bruce, it's me.
Just immediate. It's me, Barbara.
Like, if I couldn't tell by the fact that your voice and, you know, all that's covered is a little covered. Black. Who are you?
I think I wore more eye black playing football than we had on her face to cover up her identity.
It's basically thick mascara at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So at this moment, we've just gotten Poison Ivy out of the way. Batgirl's in the film. We feel like we're, excuse me. So at this point, we're rushing off to the big final fight, right? So just out of curiosity, I pause it and see there's fucking 25 minutes of this movie left. Just to deal with Mr. Freeze's big ice wiener thing. This whole sequence was just like, okay, just in the movie already.
We love that everybody does a costume change again. Right?
That's, yes, absolutely.
Silver accent pieces as they're charging. I guess they make them more cold proof. They
apparently
have bright silver parts on them.
And all their vehicles suddenly change,
they're different custom as well. Yeah, they're all on skates.
I do like that they're like, okay, well, we'll give the bike to Batgirl. So now Robin gets this weird little fan boat.
It looks like a boat that's jet ski. like in a bad hovercraft or something.
He just looks like a little kid. It's almost like he's driving
the
penguins thing.
If someone designed a rocket ship to put in front of a grocery store for a kid to ride in for 25 cents, what that was.
Yeah.
Dick will be okay in there.
Like I said, it's the penguin in the little thing.
No, I think it's matches very well. Maybe they brought it back. They just redid the outside of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, we had to build a new one because we had to spend $150 million on something. Let's see. Batgirl and Robin plummet. We get this weird, I've got you. Nope, turns out he doesn't. No, she's got him. Once again, just barf, barf, barf every time the two of these people say anything.
Yep.
Bane finally gets to him, but it turns out all you got to do is pull that tube on the back of the head. Could have done that in Act Two.
Could have done that at any time.
At any time in this movie. Batman sticks a bomb to Mr. Freeze and basically is able to reset the satellite to defrost mode because that's how that works. the worst shot of the movie for me. So we've all plummeted, and then finally Batman, you know, saves the scientist down there or whatever. And on his way back up top with his grapple, he scoops up Robin and Batgirl on the way. And then this shot of the three of them popping up out of the hole in the observatory to land on their feet is just I don't know if it's bad CGI or they like shot him jumping backwards and reversed the film or what. It's like, I think it's Nicholson falling from the tower in one level.
Oh yeah.
Bad compositing. But it's not done yet. Turns out we need a computer scientist to solve the problem. It's a good thing we established that this girl who's done, Well, I guess she's done. I guess she found out the password, so she's done a little computer stuff.
Well, she did say she was majoring in computer science at this high school that Alfred went to, Oxbridge Academy. So, I guess she's supposed to be 15,
majoring in high school.
Chris O'Donnell is getting real creepy with her.
I love that. What's your high school major?
Bruce doesn't know. He's never gone to a real school, so he thought it starts down then.
That's true. Once again, terrible little back and forth with this little girl, little boy stuff between Robin and Batgirl. Bad. but they did it. Taking Freeze back to Arkham tells him Ivy did it. God damn. But we have one last moment with Freeze. Turns out your wife is alive. You just need to find a cure. And I kind of need one for Alfred, too. Oh, what's that? You've got it in your back pocket. Great.
Take two of these and call me in the morning.
So you just carry this anecdote to your wife's
in your body armor? Like, that's where we keep this shit?
Into battle. And if you have it, why is your wife still in the tank?
Because she's got four, not one.
Oh, that's right. Stage four. That's right.
She's got the crazy stage.
That's right. She's in zombie stage.
she's been dead for years. He just froze the body, guys.
And it's all to give this weird little like nod of redemption to Freeze at the end of all this.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you were just a scientist who kind of lost his way a little bit. Like, motherfucker was trying to destroy the world.
Yeah, I wonder if that was part of the Arnold rewrite. Wanted it to be redeemed.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
That he would like the character more if he gets to be a good guy at the end.
Yeah, he's got to kind of end on a hero.
That feels like an Arnold thing.
Mm-hmm. Very Dwayne Johnson can't lose a fight on screen kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Energy. Yeah, exactly. so back at Arkham, turns out Freeze is now going to be Ivy's cellmate.
Was that? That was such a dark scene
in
like a really campy movie where she is looking like real crazy after getting, I guess, eaten by the plant.
Yeah, and she's now like she's eating the flower.
Yeah, saying he loves me not. And then he comes in and is just like, I'm going to torture you. And then we cut away.
That's it.
That's what?
It's disturbing because he says it so cheerfully. I'm here to make your life a living hell.
Yeah, I had no memory of that scene whatsoever. And it made me really uncomfortable with the end of the movie.
Well, it has
along with everything else.
I mean, you don't want to think about the really darker implications of that, but it's like, okay, neither of you have any of your powers, so are you just going to pun her to death? I mean,
that would
be
the worst torture. No one would deserve having to listen to him come up with ice puns.
Yeah, it actually kind of makes sense.
What do you think?
It actually kind of makes sense now, actually. They're like, yeah, this is a fitting punishment. Back at the manor, turns out Alfred is back on his feet, disappointed that this place looks like shit, you fucking slobs. I've been out for 5 minutes and you pick up your fucking pizza boxes.
They ordered pizza once. They didn't know what to do.
Fucking bottled water on my floor.
For the three of them.
and then Barbara, we have this whole like, hey, we're partners, and the three silhouettes running in front of the bat signal fade to black. The fucking end.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. I hit most of Nipples on a Bat Suit. I think I just wanted to shout out that we mentioned last week Nipples on a Bat Suit. Were kind of the origin of that movie, but at least in forever, they were just circles. In this movie, the costume nipples have fucking areolas. Why? Why? Why, Joel Schumacher?
I don't even get why that would be camp or cartoony. Like, I don't know what
I think they thought it was sexy. I really think they thought all that extra muscle definition and everything. I think they thought they were sexing up Batman.
All right.
Like I said, my As Good As It Gets, I think Alicia Silverstone is a clear winner on that one for me. Do you have any other awards you wanted to give out, cuz?
You know, I gave the shout out to Jesse the Body. Yeah. And then I think that My favorite line is when we mentioned just Bane going, Bob! Bob! And just walking around to blow up the... Because Mr. Freeze obviously knows that he needs to blow up the gun he's using later. But
Of course.
That's the funniest line in the whole movie.
Hey, Akiva Goldsman, you hear that? The best line in your movie is a one-syllable line from a grunting character.
Yeah, because he was the most intelligent character in the film, because he just didn't say as much stupid shit. At least he was just describing things around him.
I do not have any nominations for the Ham Hall of Fame this week. I don't think Uma or
there's
Arnold.
No one. There's no one worth it. This is not good ham.
It's
this
not
is,
good ham. It's pretty rotten. It's
gross.
Big loser. I guess I'll go Joel Schumacher because it kind of killed. Well, it certainly killed him coming back for another Batman. Kind of started to kill his career a little bit.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Joel Schumacher. Do you have a big loser?
For me, the big loser is comic book movies.
Yeah.
Like, it really shut down production for a good stretch of time. DC I think it did such a bad deal to their brand, to such iconic characters, that they were like, no, we're not making another Superman movie. Because at that point, they were planning on bringing out another Superman movie pretty much right after to get that started off of the growth of Batman.
Yeah, they'd been talking to Kevin Smith about one, I think. And then Nicolas Cage was going to do Superman.
Yeah, he was going to be in Superman. He's a huge fan. But then, they shut it down. They had all these plans and DC just completely walked away until, I mean, we talked about Blade being in it, but that's not as much of a comic book icon like the X-Men or, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man.
Yeah,
it wasn't a summer blockbuster. X-Men came later on in the 2000s. And, I think it's the year 2000 was when the first one comes out.
I think that's right. Or 99 or 2000. Yeah. Maybe because I was 99. Driving. Yeah, it would have been 2000.
So we have a full like 3-year period where this genre is shut down because this movie was so bad.
Yeah, that's fair. Big winners. I struggle to think of anybody that walked away with a win on this one. I like to try to goof it up a little bit if I can, but I got nothing. This is so bad. No,
just cross it out. Move along.
All right, so we've been ranking the Batman films as we go along so far, cousin. You've got them in release order. The only difference, I've got Returns as my number one. I assume we're both in agreement on this one. Yeah. This one is
dropped off a cliff for number four. It compares to Attack of the Clones, Harry Potter, The Chamber of Secrets, that third Hobbit movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just, while they may be part of great series, do yourself a favor, don't watch this one.
Yeah,
unless of course you're a bored college kid, you have a 24-pack of Natty Ice, and then make a game out of it. Yeah, then you'll laugh yourself away
and probably won't remember most of the shitty movies.
That'll be the best part. Then you'll be the big winner.
Our Batman rankings. I gotta say, Clooney's way last. I didn't think you could get way worse than Kilmer, but
Kilmer was nothing, and Clooney was a negative.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's
the problem. Kilmer didn't bring anything to the role, and Clooney, what Clooney brought was wrong.
Yes, yeah, exactly. All right, final question, cuz, how long until you watch this movie again? And I'm going to go ahead and give you my answer first and say, I will never watch this piece of shit ever again.
I don't know if there's going to be some point where my children's children want to watch the 14 Batman movies.
Yeah.
Because I am a grandparent or something, and I'll be like, all right, yeah, but we have to watch this one. And then I'm going to turn it on and leave the room and pretend to fall asleep because I'll be very old. That's as much fun as I'll watch.
Well, let's see. It's been 25 years since I've seen it the first time. I need at least that before I.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's. Again. Yeah. Then maybe I'll start to get nostalgic again for childhood.
All right, cousin. Any final thoughts on Batman and Robin?
Thank God we are past this point and we are moving on to Nolan. I am much more excited for that watch this week.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got all the thoughts in the world about that, but yeah, this is done. Schumacher's done. We made it through.
We did it. We survived it. So check out, if you haven't already, our past episodes on Batman, Batman Returns, and Batman Forever. This concludes our 90s era Batman. Next week, we'll be kicking off our Nolan era Batman. So friends, that's back to the spoiler for 1997's Batman and Robin right here on Spoilery Radio. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @SpoilerWarsPod. My name is Mason Fields. Until next time, stay spoilery, everybody.